My name is Daniel Shoptaw, an Arkansas accountant with a love for the Cardinals. I spent a lot of years watching the game before deciding to write about it. Now I express my thoughts and opinions at C70 at the Bat, part of the Cardinal Conclave. His name is Dan Buffa, a former Busch Stadium scoreboard operator with a passion for the game. His writing talents can be found throughout the internet on a variety of topics, including movies and anything St. Louis. You'll find him often bleeding out words at stlouissportsminute.com. Every week, we pool our knowledge and our opinions to create this podcast. Together, we are the best Dans in baseball. Welcome in to another Best Dans in Baseball. We survived 1 week. We'll try it again for week two. Daniel Shoptaw here, Dan Buffa over there. Dan, this week has been overshadowed by what went on a long time ago off the field. And I say a long time ago, months ago, or years ago. The hacking scandal, and for whatever name you want to call it, just don't call it Hackgate, because I went into that already on the blog. This is a situation where, even though, you know, we can poke a little fun at it, it is a serious situation. And thankfully, it doesn't appear that it's going to go all the way up. But, you know, there's some people in St. Louis that are a little uncomfortable right now, I believe.
Well, it's just because of, you know, the Cardinals have a target on their back to begin with, being one of the best teams in baseball and, you know, having their reputation of being a very proud franchise and a very clean franchise. That's even the way John Mozeliak put it out. So anything, any kind of a dark cloud is going to bring everybody's opinion into it. The minute I heard about it, I just advise everybody to, you know, let's not act like we're all experts on FBI investigations. I mean, we don't know where this investigation, how far it's gone into it. You know, and it's nice to hear that the top guys are clear. I mean, when I heard about it, I thought, okay, why are we hacking the Houston Astros far? And why, I mean, there's no reason. The only thing that really makes it juicy is because of Jeff Leno and John Mozeliak and their big database they built up. I think it's called the Redbird Dog, the way of evaluating talent. So I guess that makes it a little bit iffy, but I think it's just like the FBI noted in their investigation. This could be a couple of former employees just kind of taking a couple shots at Jeff Leno. I don't think it's going to amount to much, but yeah, it does get everybody going just because it's the Cardinals and, you know, this cute a Deadspin article, because apparently they're waiting on something all year to write about. Yeah, they give us some Drew Margaret head-to-head, just to have something to put on his article docket. But other than that, I think it's going to blow over. I think it's going to be something really, really small. I think the Cardinals would do some weeding in their organization, get rid of some people that are definitely not doing abiding by what they call the Cardinal way. And, you know, I think it's going to be minor, but it's definitely something that raises a cautionary flag, and it makes everybody kind of stop and look at the Cardinals, which I think is what they do anyway through the whole summer long anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the actual crime is pretty serious. I mean, there's no doubt. I don't. There are some fans out there that tend to downplay that, and I'm not saying you are or we are, and I don't think anybody with any grain of sense is. It's a, you know, we're talking federal crime, basically. We're talking jail time. We're talking some significant penalties for those people. When you look at that part of it, the actual problem, yeah, there's going to be some problems there. Again, it does not look like it went up. And I think with our interactions with the club, with the people they bring in as players, the idea of chemistry and of good people, basically, I don't want to say the Cardinal way. But that's part of it. That's not. It's not the organizational theme. It's not the mantra of the organization. The corporate culture is a very positive one, and so this is not something that fits in with what you're seeing there. So for those people, now the blow up around it, you know, the people that are always looking for something, well, you know, that noted philosopher Taylor Swift said haters are going to hate, and That's pretty much the way it is, and we pretty much have to ignore it. It's Will Leach had a pretty good video thing there, and basically his idea is talking to Cardinal fans about how they're going to deal with this, and it's basically don't feed the bear. You know, don't try to argue it. Don't try, because you can't argue it. I mean, you could put out facts and information all day long, and they're not going to listen to it.
It's really just one of those things where even I don't really even want to write about it, just because I think if you write about it, it's going to get like washed away with the next batch of news, just because it's not going to really inform anybody. It's like I pointed everybody out. I mean, this is just something you have to let play out. It is a very serious matter, and I think that the Cardinals aren't dodging. They're not ducking the FBI. They work with them throughout this whole thing. It's one of those things where you don't want to downplay it, but yeah, it's like you said, you don't want to, like, you know, brighten the bulb to make it shine around the room a little bit brighter. You just kind of want to let it play out. And as I noted, I'm just going to keep on writing about this baseball team because they're giving us enough heart attacks as it is. We don't even have to put on suits and get our notebooks out and start, you know, doing investigative reports and outside of the baseball game. The team's given us enough to write about. When it comes to the investigation, I think, you know, there's going to be answers, and it's one of those things where you hope for the best, and, you know, unless you want to ingrain yourself in the way that the FBI conducts investigations, I mean, this thing could drag on, or it could be a very swift resolution. There could be, you know, Jeff Pisan noted, and he writes for Yahoo Sports. He said if it's just one rogue employee, there's no punishment, but if it goes higher up, there is. So I guess it's kind of one of those very painful waiting games. I mean, you want to be able to tell people how it's going to be, but at the same time, you know, you don't really have a clue. So you try to just play like, you know, Switzerland when it comes to investigations. You just kind of go, well, yeah, it shouldn't be that bad, but it might be, because you just don't know.
You know, on the personal side of things, you know, the two posts I wrote about this have gotten more hits than any post that I've written in a long, long time. So maybe there's something to, you know, at least get some benefit out of it.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, I think you're right. And I think that, the only problem is, the biggest problem out of the whole thing, I think, is that the reputation of the Cardinals is tarnished and not reasonably. I mean, I was at the dentist. Taking my son earlier this week, as after this broke, and you know, I'm watching. It was Fox News, but it could have been MSNBC, it could have been CNN, it could have been whatever. It was not ESPN. It was not sports, and they're talking about it, and you can tell, you know, they don't have the grasp of it that we do. It comes across much worse. It comes across as you know, this really, you know, let's tear down the other team, let's go after their secrets, let's do this. And that's not what it is. And the problem is that is going to be in the mindset of casual fans or not fans, but people that just pick up their news, as Rush Limbaugh likes to say, the low information voter, the low information baseball fan, if you will. And they're going to have that. It's kind of, you know, we've seen that a lot with the Patriots. And, of course, the Patriots in football have their own issues, and they have had more than one of them. So it's not quite the same. But, you know, that's the first thing that you say Patriots to somebody that's a casual fan or not a fan like myself. I'm, you know, I don't watch so much football. You know, you say that, and that's the first thing you're going to think about is kind of an off, you know, a gray morality, if you will. And I'm afraid that the Cardinals get that too. And even if they come out, even if they could come out and say, hey, this guy and this guy and this guy who were, you know, peons in this organization did this, well, they're still in a no-win situation because either they did that, but nobody's going to believe that. Nobody's going to believe that that's them. I think there's a lot of people out there just going to say, oh, well, that's their fall guy. That's the guy that's covering it up. You know, it really, you know, they couldn't have.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate because, you know, even if you do everything exactly right, you don't necessarily get your reputation back now. And that's the world we live in. Probably it's been that way for a long, long time, but definitely in this age of social media and of 24-hour news and things that you could talk about forever, you know, people hear the scandal. They don't hear the result 2 months, 3 months, 4 months down the line and they don't care. This is the impression that the people are left with.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, you can do a very quick judgment on it. You can just call it and go, I don't think it's that bad, or you can just let it play out, or you can quickly just, you know, you can join the easy crowd, which is the crowd that wants to, like I said, throw daggers at the Cardinals whenever they have a chance, and that's what a lot of people are going to be doing right now. And, you know, there's a lot of Cardinal fans that are going to get caught up in that mess, you know, and get into a big battle over something that has nothing to do with baseball. I mean, it just, it's just something that we don't know when it happened. You know, it's right in the middle of a hot summer of baseball, and people are going to get all bent out of shape about it, and that's the sad part. And that's what I'm trying to avoid, because people out there are going to try to bait Cardinal fans. I mean, they're going to try to get them into a big argument about it, and really nobody knows the facts. I mean, all you know is the investigation that was released in the New York Times story. It's kind of it's vague details. You know, you get some juicy stuff when they're talking about maybe it's just a couple employees that are just getting back at Jeff Leno, or it could be a couple other employees that are really just trying to take data, or was it a problem with people using Jeff Leno's password after he had taken it, you know, to Houston with him? It's just so foggy. I mean, you can write about it, and sure, it's going to get a lot of hits, but, you know, I'm almost kind of waiting for, you know, maybe one shoe to drop or a hammer to drop, or just when this really kind of starts to unfold, which I think it's going to happen pretty soon, because I don't think they want to drag this thing out. I mean, I think whoever, when it comes to the, you know, the digital media world and computers, you can't really hide that much. So I'm pretty sure they're going to find out who it is. And I think, like you said, no matter if the Cardinals, if it comes very light on the Cardinals and it's just an employee and okay, it's this one guy did it. Okay, this guy is responsible. The people who wanted to hate in the beginning are going to hate on. I mean, it's just like whenever they have a chance to jump on the Cardinals, they're going to do it. And no matter what the outcome is, they're going to find a way to make it look bad on the Cardinals. And the people that just kind of stayed away and stayed in the middle and waited for the resolution, well, they're going to be thankful that it's over. I think everybody has their agenda. I mean, this is – it's like one of those – you know, pop culture battles, or when people have, you know, societal issues. I mean, everybody comes to the party with a pre-existing idea about what they want to do. So the people that don't like the Cardinals are gonna jump right in onto that bandwagon and smack us for this and that, and it has nothing to do with being the best team in baseball. And then there's the crowd that's gonna just valiantly just stand in front of their team and say, no, they could have done no wrong. I ran into like three people on Twitter that said, no, my boys do nothing wrong. It's like, you know, it's not Randall Grichuk doing anything wrong. You know that, right? It's not Randall Grichuk. Just calm down. You get fans that just support their team 150%. And then you have people kind of like, I guess, like me. I mean, I write about the team. I'm a fan. And I'm just trying to stay in the middle because I don't want to get too bent on one side to where I can't come back to that comfy middle ground.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, I mean, it's additional, like, there's an article up at Viva, well, it's Viva Alberto's has the link, it's from Sports Illustrated, where Lunell talked to them, and basically said it doesn't do you any good to get into the system anyway, because things change so fast, you know?
Yeah.
Getting stuff from 2 years ago is not any good, because things can be different in a month. And I think that's why a lot of people don't think that it's any doesn't go very far up, because it was posted online. I mean, if you're going to actually try to steal stuff, you know, you kind of keep it for yourself instead of drawing attention to the fact that you stole stuff. maybe they thought they could find something more relevant, and when they didn't, they decided to try the embarrassment factor. I just thought it was interesting. And, you know, Lunell says he left on good terms in St. Louis. You know, there's been that idea that he didn't necessarily. Yeah, I was a little surprised at that idea that came out, because, you know, in 2007, right, when Jocketty left, you know, there was a very definitive split in that organization between Lunell and Jocketty, and I'm sure each side had their partisans. But by the time Lunell left in the end of 11, that kind of schism was gone. I mean, John Mozeliak was hired to pave over that fissure and did a very good job. So I didn't think that Lunell necessarily – I'm sure there were some people that were irritated, felt he was cocky, whatever. But for the most part, people seemed to be on line with what he was doing, especially since the Cardinals were being so successful. So I was a little surprised that this motive of embarrassment was out there, and it still may be. I mean, all it takes is, you know, ticking off the wrong person. You know, 95% of the place could love you, but if you hit the 5% that knows how to get into your system, then you're in trouble. But I was just a little surprised. And it'll be, again, it'll be interesting to see. Like you say, the FBI, I have a feeling the FBI, probably the Cardinals, know who did it. They just don't have enough proof to do anything about it yet. You know, the Cardinals aren't going to fire somebody until they have enough proof to do that, so they don't run the risk of any lawsuits or anything like that. Obviously, the FBI is not going to bring charges until they've got everything, their ducks in a row. But, with this coming out now, most likely they got a pretty good idea of who it is or the people that it was. And, again, I don't know that this was more than a, you know, kind of a prank that took a negative turn. Again, once they actually put the case together, I think that'll be pretty fascinating for us. But right now, like you say, it's not worth necessarily going over and over and over. But we do anyway.
Oh yeah. I mean, and definitely, and it's one of those things you're not going to be able to really stay away from. So people are always going to be talking about it until it's over. And I agree with you. I think they already know who it is, but you know, the FBI, they have their way of doing things. I mean, they're used to really dealing with a lot more dangerous criminals than Cardinals, lower level executives. So I'm sure they're getting all their ducks in a row just to make sure that they don't mess anything up. And when they do bring this to a conclusion, because I think they understand that, yes, this is a baseball team, but this is a very serious matter, like you said. And, you know, and the same way they're handling the investigation, they don't want to fumble anything, that they don't want to close it up too soon and miss something. I mean, they want to close it up, and I think everybody kind of wants to get past it. And I think it's going to be, I personally think, I mean, if you ask me, Dan, what's going to happen with this, I think it's going to be minor. But as far as a timetable on it, I just can't tell you, just because these things can stretch or they can also just end pretty suddenly. But if I were the fans, and this is what I would tell you, I would just tell you just to enjoy the baseball team. This is almost like having when somebody that you know goes into the hospital and you have that initial panic, like, oh God, what's wrong? And, you know, you have to wait for the diagnosis. You have to wait for something to really be worried about. And I think that's the way you got to worry about this thing. And if it gets to be really bad, we'll know about it. And we'll be talking about it even more. But I think for the time being, I would just enjoy Cardinal baseball.
Somebody put out on Twitter, and I don't know who, but it was very, very good. Somebody suggested that while the FBI was in St. Louis, that they might take on the case of the missing offense.
Of course.
Because this team, you know, they just played a four-game set with the Twins, which, you know, it's basically two game sets because they play two in Bush and they go to Minnesota for two because baseball doesn't know how to schedule.
And they scored eight runs.
They
total.
Scored, yeah, they got outscored 9-8 in those four games.
I mean, God.
That, I mean, because, yeah, 3-2, they win and they lose 3-1 and 2-1. The offense is not there. It's been, you have to go back to 2 weeks from today. This is Thursday the 18th. The 2 weeks ago, they were in Los Angeles. They played that first game in Los Angeles, won 7-1. Since that time, the high they've hit is 4. Now, they've done that 1, 2, 3, it looks like 4 times. But that's it. I mean, they've been shut out once. They've had two games in a row here that they've only scored one. If this pitching staff wasn't, you know, almost historic in how good it is, we'd be looking up at Pittsburgh by now, because Pittsburgh's not in the mood to lose. It doesn't seem like. They've won 7 in a row going into tonight and have cut the lead down to 4.5, depending on what happens this evening.
Yes, and, you know, the Cardinals, they rank like 25th in runs, and they're, you know, they have the best record in baseball. It defies logic. Like, if I was telling somebody who knew nothing about the game, if I was to talk to my mom about Cardinal baseball right now, I would say, Mom, Cardinals are, they're the best team in baseball, but they can't score runs. And my mom would, being a logical person, would go, that doesn't make sense. And then we would divulge into a discussion about what's going on. You know, I wrote about this last night. You know, it's they haven't scored a lot. They haven't really been a consistent offense. And one of the factors is the lacking, the missing presence of Matt Holliday. And I think we're seeing just how important he is, at least to this team this year. I mean, the Cardinals were having trouble scoring runs before he went down, but, you know, when I looked at it, by May 15th of, like, last month, the Cardinals had scored 4-plus runs in 11 different games. in the 7 games since he went down that they've averaged less than 3 runs per game. I guess 8 games now. They're averaging less than 3 runs, almost about 2 in these last 8 games. And it's just, you know, you look for a remedy and, you know, you hope for Jason Hayward to start hitting. You hope for Yadier Molina to hit more. You hope for our new cleanup guy, Mark Reynolds, who will never sit down because the only backup they have is Pete Cosma, or John Mayberry for that matter. You know, I mean, it's one of those things where I can't look at a remedy on this roster, the active roster, and say that it can immediately help. I can't point at one hitter and say that somebody's just going to pick this offense up. And I think what you're seeing is when you take out one cog like Holiday, who had a .417 on base percentage on a team that really is fueled by on base percentage, it just tells you how much they were depending on Matt Holiday to play his role.
Yeah, I mean, that is the biggest key. It has shuffled the lineup to lose him. It does leave limited options, like you say. Mark Reynolds, I think we may have talked about this last week. I've talked about it. It's the problem with doing too many shows. You don't remember where you talk about stuff. But,
you don't.
You know, and I know I have on Sunday nights. I expected Mark Reynolds to be overexposed playing every day.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been. He's hit better. Now, he hasn't hit for the power, and he had a couple home runs this week, which was good. Been some idea of him modifying his swing. But yeah, we got to get somebody going. And that somebody very well may not be on this team. You look at Jason Hayward. Hayward is looking at his splits. You know, he hit 284. He's hit 284 in May. He's hit 289 in June, not counting today. But and he got that home run. Those big home run today. Looked like it might be a game winner for a little while. I think that he's coming around. It's fascinating, something to really look at how bad his ground ball percentage is. He's really hitting the ball pretty much every time on the ground. But if he can get, you know, a little bit loft, he start hitting some doubles, you know, even if he's not hitting home runs, maybe he can pick up some of that gap. But with Holiday out, you knew Jay and Borges were going to cause some problems. I mean, even if they got going, they're not going to be at Holiday's level.
No.
Grichuk has got some power, but he's got a lot of learning to do. And, you know, we saw Molina hit a home run, but he's still not the offensive force that he could be. There are a lot of holes in this lineup, and it seems like, and I wrote about it before on the blog, we may see 8, 9, 10 hits a game. Probably not quite that many, but, you know, 7 or 8 hits a game, they're just not bunched together very well. They're, you know, there'll be a hit here and then two more outs and then a hit in the next inning and, you know, maybe get a couple guys on but not be able to drive them in. Like we saw today, you know, Matt Carpenter doubled in the ninth. Moved to third and then stood there because Reynolds struck out and Yadier Molina couldn't come through.
It's one of those things where, you know, Hayward's right on the cusp. You know, he's got, you know, not like horrible numbers. He's got 6 home runs, 20 RBIs. His average is climbing slowly. His on base and his slug are okay, but he, you know, he seems to have those games where you think he's going to climb out of it. Like, you know, he's had, you know, 3 2-hit games in his last 10 games. He's got, he's only gone hitless twice. I mean, it's one of those things where you think he's going to become that guy, you know, when Holiday's down, but then he regresses. He has like a, you know, a series of ground balls. And the problem with Grichuk and Reynolds is, I mean, these guys got strikeout rates of like 33-34%. I mean, Grichuk, just for example, I mean, Grichuk's got 109 at bats and he struck out 34 times. I mean, he's just got a lot of holes in his swing still. And, you know, and he's also a guy, this is his first full year on the team. I mean, he's a guy that really came up with the team last year really quickly without a lot of minor league at bats. He didn't get a lot of time down there. He tore up when he was down there, but he kind of came to the major league club a little raw. And I think he's still a little raw. He's only hitting around 230 in the month of May. He's got around 17 strikeouts. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are having a rough month. Matt Carpenter before today, he was hitting 182. John Jay is hitting 129. Colt Wong's hitting 241. You have a lot of cogs in this lineup, except for Johnny Peralta, who seems to just continue to be a steady presence and a guy who just, you know, he's hitting 306. He's got a great slash line. He's leading a team in home runs and RBIs. while striking out a lot, but still, I mean, when Peralta does the rest of the stuff so well, you can take the strikeouts. When you get a guy like Mark Reynolds, who has 166 at bats, he's got 55 strikeouts, you know. It just, I mean, I love what Reynolds could potentially bring, but I'm with you. I think he's being exposed, and I'm one of the big, I mean, I wrote about it today. I'm one of the big advocates to bring up Xavier Scruggs. I know he's right-handed, but Xavier Scruggs is really having a good week. I mean, he's got 11 home runs down in Memphis. He's got 35 RBIs. He gets on base. He walks. I just think that this guy, he's only gotten 16 at-bats at the major league level, and I really wonder what the Cardinals are thinking about this guy, that they don't want to give him any more. I mean, did Brock Peterson get a better look than Xavier Scruggs? I mean, there's a lot of guys in this organization that have gotten a little bit more of a look. I mean, if Nick Stavanoa got the extended look that he did one time, I think we can give Xavier Scruggs a few more at bats. And it's not even really to really make him replace Reynolds. I just think he can give the Cardinals a different look at first base.
Now, to be fair, Nick Stavanova played on weaker teams than what we're seeing here.
Yes, he did. You're right.
You're not. You know, Scruggs is a little bit of an interesting dilemma. You know, I'm pulling up the numbers now. You know, he's back up. At one time, you know, he was hitting about 220 and not really doing anything. But now he's hitting about 250. He's got, like you said, he's got the 11 homers. It would seem to me, I mean, again, he's not going to hit that well. I mean, if he's only hitting 250 at AAA, he's probably not going to hit that well in the big leagues. But, you know, at least if nothing else, he gives you a little bit more pop off the bench, and he gives you a guy that you can alternate Reynolds with, even if they're both on the same the same handedness. Because somebody's got to. I mean, there's no way that Mark Reynolds can play the next, you know, 100 games. Every
it's scary,
game,
isn't it?
I mean, it just isn't possible. I mean, I guess it's possible, but it's very unlikely, and it's not good for the team. Now, again, I think that's a place where Mo's going to focus. He may be just going to try to get, you know, or what, 2 weeks away? 3 weeks away, I guess. Well, actually closer to a month, I guess, to the All-Star break. It's a little bit farther off than I thought, but still. It's one of those things where maybe Mo's going to try to make it that far. But I think he's going to have to go get something. And again, it may be a small bat. It may be a guy that he can get for a song, basically. But he's going to have to get somebody with some experience and some pop, because that's the problem. Now, I haven't heard anything on Matt Holliday to know if he's going to be coming back. You know, maybe he can come back sometime. I've looked up Jason Hayward's splits. He gets better as the summer goes along. In fact, August is like one of his best months. So maybe he'll continue to heat up. And so maybe eventually we'll start seeing that. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe we'll see it this weekend. You go into Philadelphia. Philadelphia is a bad team. It's a good hitting ballpark. But we thought that when they went to Colorado and they lost 2 of 3.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, and scored a whopping 10 runs in those 3 games. So, you know, just because it's really conducive to offense doesn't mean that's what we're going to see.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, you're also going to miss Cole Hamels. You're going to face Aaron Harang Saturday, but the other two games are really highly winnable. This is the perfect team for the Cardinals to beat up on. This is the perfect team for you guys, for the Cardinals to find their bats. And this is the kind of thing, if you go in this weekend and you can't find a way to hit the Phillies, like everybody hits the Phillies. I mean, you know, if you put the Memphis Redbirds against the Phillies, they may be able to scratch some runs across the board. It's one of those things where it's kind of like a litmus test. You know, you got to go, okay, you know, you upcoming, you have teams that are not as weak as the Phillies. You have the Phillies at a point where they're really weak, and you're missing their ace, who actually won the only game against the Cardinals the last time they faced each other when they took 3 out of 4 at Busch. You know, the Cardinals, this is a perfect time for the pitching to keep on going strong and the bats to kind of find their way. You know, it's a hitter's ballpark, so you think guys like Hayward and Reynolds especially can really find their swing there and put to use. And, you know, I mean, I also look at a guy like Tommy Pham. I mean, I'm looking at him right now, and he just came back. He's got, you know, he's only got 10 games and 28 at-bats, but he seems to be able to be a guy who can get on base. And, you know, he's got some pop. But, you know, I see the problem with him is you bring up Tommy Pham, you make it already crowded out, feel very crowded. And we all know Mike Matheny isn't going to part with John Jay, even if he hits 050, which the way that John Jay's just not recovering. He hit a few balls okay the last couple of days, but he's still not getting the hits. And Biscotti, you know, I warn against him just because you want him to play every day. You want him to get those at-bats. And unless he splits times with Grichuk, I don't see him as an option. And that's why I keep coming back to Scruggs. I think Scruggs could have really helped the team. Well, here we are in past tense. He could have helped the team in Minnesota point being a DH. But I just think at this point, you know, a bench bat cannot just alter an offensive approach of a baseball team. But, you know, when the Cardinals are playing so many close games, I think about if a guy comes off the bench with a little bit of pop, maybe, you know, he gets a big hit, he could change the whole game. The Cardinals were one hit away from maybe winning these two games in Minnesota. And if you have a guy like Scruggs up there taking that swing instead of a guy like Tony Cruz or a guy like Pete Cosma, or if he's in the DH role and he has a little more pop, you never know what happens. When you play a lot of close games, every single at-bat counts. So I think a move can be made to help the team, but I also think if Mazzanek wants to get a feel for where his club is at, this weekend in Philadelphia is going to give a pretty clear answer.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that may force Mo to do some stuff a little earlier. Like we said, Pittsburgh is probably about to finish off the White Sox. They're going to be four out by the end of the night. They go into Washington, who has been a little bit, I mean, Washington's a good team, and so they should at least stop the Pittsburgh winning streak at some point in time this weekend. But they're hurting. You know, Bryce Harper left tonight with a knee, I think, that may have to be reevaluated. You know, they have struggled this year more than we expected. You know, Pittsburgh may easily win two out of three there. If you do not win at least two out of three in Philadelphia, you know, you're talking about that league getting awful tight. And for the fact that you're playing 650 ball, to have that league get tight, I mean, that's, and you know you're not going to be able to play 650 ball the rest of the way. I know we said this back in 2013. Cardinals can't hit and runners from scoring position all year long. That was a fluke. They're just not going to play that well, and especially not with the injuries and the offensive performance that they're going to, because the pitching staff is going to start getting hit. There's going to be some regression. There's going to be, you know, warmer weather. There's going to be better people that they're going to be facing. Even if they start giving up three runs a game instead of two runs a game, that one run can be huge. And so he's going to have to do something. And in right now, and again, Mo knows his job much better than we do. But it seems to me that he's not going to be able to wait until 2 days, 3 days before the trading deadline like he often does and tries to get that deal there. He's been really good at it. I just don't think the Cardinals can wait that long to get some sort of offensive bat in here. Now, maybe if Holiday comes back quicker, he can wait. But I think for the most part, he's really going to have to probably, you know, maybe set the market a little bit and get a bat in here.
Yeah, I mean, with Holiday, see, what I think with Holiday, I think when he comes back, he's going to need like a week or two to kind of get that swing back. I mean, we would love for him to come back and just start, you know, killing the ball to all fields. But I think, like when people say, well, what if he comes back in 5 weeks? Well, I think, okay, so we'll have him back in 7 weeks. Because as far as being the Matt Holiday we all know, the guy that gets on base, hits doubles, shreds, you know, balls to right, left, hits balls harder than anybody, not named Giancarlo Stanton. I mean, that guy is going to need time to get back in the swing of things. So I think if Mo waits that long, man, he is really seriously like just treading on a very, very thin log across a very deep river. I mean, the thing is, I mean, the more you tread water, I mean, and the problem, I understand what Mo's thinking. He's thinking, okay, this team handled the Royals. They handled the Dodgers. And, you know, we lost Holiday, and we're getting strong pitching. And as, you know, a very trusted source, Bob Netherton, told me last night, you know, the Cardinals are playing 650 ball, they're fine. Well, if they have a rough weekend in Philadelphia, then they're not only going to be not playing 650 ball, but they're going to be barely hanging on to first place. And when the Pittsburgh Pirates are playing this good, and the Cardinals have held them off for this long with good pitching, what if that good pitching, like you said, regresses? And then we start going through a rough patch, because what I'm looking at right now, being a fan, if I'm looking ahead, I'm looking ahead right before the All-Star break when the Cardinals play 8 games on the road in Wrigley and PNC Park. They have, they're making up the rain out in Wrigley. They're playing 4 in Wrigley, and they're playing 4 in Pittsburgh. And right now, looking like 2 weeks, 3 weeks ahead, that's kind of what I'm looking at. I mean, if you get there and you still have a weak bench and you still haven't really made up for a very weak offense, And I really got to question, what is Mo waiting for? Because there comes a time where you have to just go out there and start poking around. Excuse me. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, how long can you wait? How long can you let Mark Reynolds and Yadier Molina be your 4 and 5 guys who, you know, over the last the games in Minnesota, they didn't resemble anything that looked like a 4 and 5 guy. You know, they both, as far as just being guys that you go, okay, those guys are going to drive it runs. They can't do that. And it's because Mark Reynolds is playing too much and Yadier Molina shouldn't be hitting 5th. He should be hitting 7th. But you're doing that because of the loss of Holiday and a loss of Adams, and because your team is built around getting on base, not having power. So right now, I mean, while I can say I want to know what this team looks like at the end of July, I can't tell you that. I hope Matt Holiday is back on that team, but I also hope that there's some new blood on the team. And I don't care if it's from Memphis, but I have a feeling that with the way that Mo is waiting, that he hasn't tapped that Memphis bus yet, that he hasn't called down there, he might be cooking up a trade, or he could just be really worrying about the FBI. I have no idea.
There is some of it. I mean, because there is some, I don't want to say that the investigation has been a major issue for him, because they've been dealing with this since February or March, but having the extra scrutiny, the extra bit of having it public, having to answer questions, deal with the media, things of that nature, very well maybe kind of tapping into some of those times. Again, I don't know the last time John Mozeliak made a trade in June, if he ever has. You know, I think it's very rare that he doesn't move before the All-Star break. So, again, he's probably laying the groundwork, but I just don't know that he can wait that long. Again, even if he has to bring up Scruggs, Dan Johnson, somebody to try to, you know, get by for a couple of weeks, I think he's going to have to do something. Like, you know, Bernie's got an article today, the bench is extremely weak, and you were talking about that as well, because you've got whoever isn't playing outfield, and then you've got, you know, two catchers, and you got Pete Cosma. That's not the lineup. That's not going to scare anybody. I mean, you don't want any of them up in the ninth inning. There's nobody. You know, the idea was when we signed Mark Reynolds that he was going to be that pump off the that pop off the bat, a pop off the bench. That's what I was trying to say. And and you know, or Matt Adams, whoever wasn't playing, you'd have at least one thumper to come off the line, off the bench. Right now, there isn't that guy. You know, that's the idea. If Holiday comes back, you know, maybe you have Grichuk on the bench, but still. Right now, there's nobody, and that's not going to work, especially now. Especially, I mean, you know, this is a team right now that plays 500 ball. They win, I think, 92 games. So this is a team that, barring a major collapse, is going to be playing in October.
Yeah.
And you've got to be looking for that already too. And you've got to know that when it, if it comes down to October, you know, who do you want facing these, you know, these good bullpens? Do you want to be going to the bench and getting, you know, John Jay? Do you want Ed Easley being your, you know, I mean, these things aren't going to work. Something's going to have to happen. And it's kind of funny because, you know, at one time we thought this team was pretty stocked and Mo might not have to make any moves because you didn't know what he would do.
Yeah.
And now there's holes here, there's holes. There's not too many holes in the rotation, especially since Lance Lynn shouldn't be gone too long. The bullpen has been outstanding, but do you still think about getting an arm to, you know, keep them strong, refreshed, maybe replace Mitch Harris with somebody that's a little bit more established?
Yeah.
There's some options there. But, you know, right now, you know, we asked this question, I don't know, I guess it was last week. I know it was one time when you and I talked, you know, if you only could make one move, what would you do? I think it's got to be hitting. And if you could only make one move, that's what you have to do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lean. After the week the Cardinals had, I think your point's been driven to the ground pretty solidly, just because of the way that they're not generating runs. I mean, this is not like a streaky offense. This is an offense that just doesn't exist. I mean, when you go against guys like, you know, Tommy Malone and Mike Pelfrey, and you can't scratch anything together. Two pitchers that were kind of hammered the last time they pitched, and, you know, you can't scratch anything but a run. That's just alarming. I mean, and you know, you are down Holiday, but you gotta be able to plate some runs. You gotta be able to. Well, one of the things that the Cardinals are so good about is just being versatile on offense and having a number of threats. And it's like you said, the loss of Matt Adams was a pain just because you made Mark Reynolds very visible, and you know, very soon to be overexposed. And now with Matt Holliday, maybe we overexpose Randall Grichuk or force John Jay to get too many at bats too soon. I mean, I think these things are just forcing the Cardinals to be more overexposed as an offense themselves. And I think it's going to be outside help, because the more I write about it, the more I write about minor league call-ups and having nothing happen, I have to think that Mozeliak is going to bring in some guy that's got experience. I mean, I mentioned Dan Johnson just because he can give you a different look than Mark Reynolds at first base. He's left-handed. He can hit lefties. He's a guy that can give you something very different, but you had to put him on the 40-man roster and you had to take somebody off of it. But, I mean, that's a move that he can make, and I think that's why I brought Dan Johnson on, to have that option. But, and of course, you know, I mean, no general manager thinks that the Cardinals are going to have this many injuries by middle of June. I mean, they lose, you know, your ace in the rotation, lose two very well-established, you know, starters in your lineup that you kind of depend on. It's a blow. And it's like you said, the bench did have Grichuk and Reynolds, and now they're both playing every day, and that's going to take a toll. And I think that, yes, I mean, a move for offense has to come. I don't care if he has to sacrifice a player that we're looking forward to in 2 years. I mean, you sometimes just have to make a move. And the Cardinals haven't really made a move for a big bat. I mean, I'm not asking them to find a Will Clark or even a Matt Holliday or a Larry Walker. I mean, those kind of lightning in the bottle moves that worked so well in the past, I mean, they're so rare to find, and you don't know what they're gonna cost. But, I mean, I even think of a guy like, who am I thinking of? A guy that's basically played all over the, he played for the Pirates last year. They picked him up. Marlon Byrd. I mean, I know we have a lot of outfielders, but, you know, even a veteran like that, just somebody that can hit. That's been known to hit on different teams and hit in different spots. I mean, I think Mo has to be cooking something up. And like you said, it has to happen soon. Because if you go into Philadelphia and you can't hit, this team's in trouble.
Let's talk about some of the positives. And maybe it's a flip side of this, the same discussion, though, is the fact that they are winning games with this pathetic offense because the pitching staff has been so good. And let's talk. When we saw today, Jaime Garcia went out there again, threw six innings, didn't allow a run again. Second game in a row, he has thrown shutout innings. His ERA is down to 1.76 over his six starts, and that's including giving up three earned and six against Arizona in his second start. He walked two guys today. That was the first time he's walked anybody since his first start against the Mets back in May. All in all, Jaime Garcia has been more than you could ever imagine. I mean, we knew he was good when he's healthy, and that's always the kicker. You don't know how long that's going to last. But he's been even more dominant than we could have hoped for. And to be able to put him in the rotation with Walker, with Carlos Martinez, with Lance Lynn when he's going well, you know, that's amazing to watch this kind of pitching all the time. And it's frustrating to see Garcia only have two wins out of some very stellar outings.
Yeah, I mean, I know today that Carlos Martinez and Jaime Garcia now have six consecutive quality starts in a row, and they both pitch well enough to win a game in Minnesota. And they basically gave the Cardinals a chance to sweep all four games with the way they pitched. I mean, it was dominant. I mean, the only reason that the Twins were ahead in the game last night was because of a throwing error by the pitcher, and that caused the second run to come across. That just tells you how close all these games are. The Cardinals have lost a lot of one-run games recently, and you know, and that's something that early in the season that they're winning a lot. They're winning a lot of close games, and it is. I mean, Jaime Garcia, you know, when he's on, I mean, this guy is a very good pitcher. He's very capable. I mean, when I talked to Rick Hummel, and when we were covering Jaime's rehab start in Memphis, you know, he had to remind us that, hey, this guy's got 42 wins. I mean, he's got a great overall record as a major league pitcher. His one problem, excuse me, is health. And right now, he's pitching like a dominant ace. I mean, he's not just really giving quality starts. He's going out there and pitching seven innings, eight innings. He's dominating the lineup three times through. And pitch. I mean, hitters are just, they're not getting good hits against them. I mean, a couple of the hits today at least were infield hits. They're kind of squibs. I mean, hitters just don't look right against them. And when Jaime is right and when he is pitching great, hitters just, they hate facing him because they can't square up the ball. He's got that slider. He's got the fastball, the breaking ball. And he's not using a lot of pitches. I mean, six innings of work today, six plus, he only threw 89 pitches. I mean, he's just devastating right now on the mound. I mean, I was one of the guys that wanted to see him stay in there, but of course, Seth Maness comes in and works his magic. But it's very encouraging to see the pitching do this, and it's very encouraging to see it come from unlikely sources. I didn't think Carlos Martinez was going to bounce back this great after his little hiccup against the Cubs and the Pirates early in the season. I mean, he's a guy who's pitching like he's, you know, almost Jaime's age as far as just being able to recover on a mound and keep his head and, you know, mix all of his pitches around. I mean, hitters can't really square up a ball on him at all either. And to see the rotation rally behind the loss of Waino and now this last week against without Lance Lynn, which will hopefully only be for 15 days, but it's really encouraging. And I think that makes us really rant on about the offense so much. It's because of how good the pitching is and how good even the bullpen is. Even when they buckled, it hasn't been for barely anything. I mean, today, you know, Kevin Seagrass finally got dented on when Joe Mauer took him deep. I mean, that was just one of those things where it was a bad pitch. But even Seagrass has been great in covering for Trevor Rosenthal, who was supposedly ready to go today if there was going to be a save situation. I think the pitching is great, and I think that we all know it can't last. It can't be as efficient. I think just basically balls put in play is going to start going against the Cardinal pitchers. I mean, I think some stuff's going to start dropping. Like you said, it's going to be hotter outside. Balls are going to start carrying. But as far as what these guys are doing, I mean, this is encouraging to see because pitching, you know, you can't buy good pitching and you can't obtain it from college teams easily. You have to nurture it right. You can't take it. You can't find it by hacking into it. Oh, anyway, you really have to, I mean, pick the right guys and run with them. I think the Cardinals are showing what they can do right now. I mean, they've been able to survive without, you know, their biggest innings horse. And now even when their second biggest innings guy goes down, they're still able to exist. And I think if the offense can pick it up, I mean, this team can go, I mean, can maintain that best record and they can easily stay ahead of the Pirates, but they got to hit. And that's why it gets tied in the pitching so much is because of how great they are, but they're not getting the run support.
In that video I referenced earlier from Will Lynch, and if I think about it, I'll try to link that up when we post this up at our Podbean site. It's the bdib.podbean.com. I'll try to post a link to this video, but Will Lynch did this, the one of, you know, don't worry about it, Card fans. Or how to deal with things, but he also mentioned Carlos Martinez, and he made the point in passing that one that I have thought as well. He said this would be everybody's favorite pitcher if he didn't pitch for the Cardinals, and I think that's exactly right. He shows emotion. He's having fun, and he's being very dominant. I mean, you're looking at a guy that's struck out 85, walked 35, and that's in 80 innings. I mean, he's going out there. Like you say, except for those two outings back-to-back that he just got lit up on, I mean, he's not done anything. I mean, if you get two runs off of him, that's saying something. He's given up 25 runs in 13 starts. You take, you know, he gave up 14 of those in two of them, so you're looking at 11 runs over 11. So basically, he's given up a run a game. That's outstanding. I mean, he would easily be one of these great guys that everybody's kind of jumping on the bandwagon for, except for the team he plays for. And the fact that the rest of the team's been so good, it kind of overshadows that a little bit too. But I'm one like you. I thought he was going to be a five-inning pitcher a lot this year. Thought we'd have to, you know, he'd have to really work his way into becoming this guy that everybody had talked about. And instead he's gone out and proved that, hey, this is why they kept him instead of Shelby Miller. And so it's been a lot of fun to see. But like you say, he's got to get run support as well. He's 7-3. He's been able to, you know, to get by and get a little bit, I guess, get enough. Garcia is the one I think that's getting the worst case. I mean, I think what they've all but two starts are the only two starts he's won are the only times the Cardinals have scored for him. Every other game, the Cardinals have not scored for Jaime Garcia when he's in the game. So, it's a tough thing to do. We'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I think Carlos Martinez could have the record of Michael Wacha because, I mean, Wacha, unlike last year, has actually gotten run support. I mean, I think Carlos Martinez could easily be a 9-win pitcher right now. And, I mean, this rotation could look even better. But, I mean, the way they're pitching, it makes those innings and those strikeouts even a little bit more important than the wins. Because we all know the wins will come when they start getting run support. But just the way that the dominance that him and Garcia are showing is very good to see, especially if Lynn does come back and then say he's sharp. Maybe that form issue was kind of cutting into his efficiency. So if he starts pitching like we all know he can and being very consistent, and this rotation, maybe it won't miss a beat. Maybe we'll be able to survive, and Mo can really pursue that bat.
And, you know, Marco Gonzalez is starting to get through his stuff, looking like he's finally starting to get back pretty soon. So that's a good thing. It gives him a little more cushion. And then this week, then the last few days, there's become that whole idea, the carrot that Adam Wainwright might be back before the end of the year. I remembered seeing somebody reference when I guess then they had the fantasy camp that he came to the fantasy camp and somebody asked him if he would be ready for spring training, and he said the spring training start in October. And that's the first time I kind of got the indication he was aiming for it. Now, we remember 2011. We remember when he had the Tommy John surgery that he kept training like he could be back for October. And he didn't. He wasn't going to. The Cardinals weren't going to let him. That said, this is a different situation. This is just the foot. This is not an arm situation, not something that he's likely to re-injure. If he gets, you know, clearance, if he can train it and get it healthy, we saw him on Fox Sports this week. He's off his crutches. He's got the boot for another couple of weeks. If it's just a strengthening thing, you know, who knows? I don't think I'd rule out Adam Wainwright for maybe not as a starter, but because he wouldn't have a chance to build up the arm strength. But as a two-inning reliever, a guy that can come in and pitch and be on that postseason roster and be a long man, or a guy that, you know, if you have to yank a starter, you can throw him for a couple innings, I wouldn't rule that out.
Oh, not at all. I mean, hey, if you give me any piece of Adam Wainwright, and I'll take it. I mean, if you give me, 60%, I'll take it. It's just because of what he is out there on the mound and what the team will play like with him on the mound. I mean, he makes the whole team better. He makes everybody feel more confident. He's an ace. And as I wrote early in the year about Wacha becoming an ace, it's half stats, and it's really half the way that you act out there. And I think if Wainwright does come back, that may give, you know, the team an all around just boost. It's one of those things you think about, and like you said, it's not really likely. You know, all we can do is hope that he does find a way back. And that's the biggest, the most positive thing about what did happen to Adam Wainwright is it didn't happen to his upper body. His arm, his elbow, his shoulder is intact. He, you know, when he's able to push off that foot and he's able to do anything, I mean, he'll be ready to go, and it won't be a big deal. It's just about getting that Achilles heel completely, you know, back into full motion. You don't want to rush it because you could really, mess it up. I know what I've heard from reading around a little bit on is if you do try to rush back, it could be bad, but we all know the Cardinals and Wainwright won't do that. I know Waino won't do it. I know if Waino says that he's ready to go, he won't do it unless he knows his body is ready to go. And it's one of those things you do think about late in the year. If we make it to the end of the year and we get the division title, and now we're looking at, well, what's our rotation? What's our roster in the playoffs? If Waino can be a part of it, I mean, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, no doubt. And again, if the Cardinals are not going to rush him out there, it's not like they need the pitching. It's a nice thing. Like I say, it's a boost to the team. He's a guy that knows what he's doing, at least right now. And obviously, he's not coming back right now. So maybe when he it's a different story. When he is maybe physically ready, you know, they're not going to need him as desperately as they might have needed, you know, Chris Carpenter a couple of years ago when he came back late in the year. They kind of needed him a little bit more than they would need Wainwright right now. Let's see. We've gone, you know, getting close to an hour. And I don't want us to put everybody to sleep, especially if they happen to be driving.
Yeah, really. That'd be very dangerous.
Yeah, very dangerous. I do want to mention, though, and I noticed it on a friend of ours' Facebook page that brought it to my attention. This is 13 years ago today we lost Jack Buck, which always reminds me not only of the passing of Jack Buck, but also what happened just 4 days later with the passing of Daryl Kyle. That was a very tough week that June of 2002. Dan, I know you were in the St. Louis at that time. Do you have any, general remembrances, thoughts of that week?
I was working the manual scoreboard, and, when he was in the hospital, my dad's an x-ray tech, and he happened to be, close to the wing that Jack Buck was in. So I couldn't really tell anybody, but I would at the time, but I would get these little updates from my dad as he worked right next to where they were keeping him, and where he was, he spent his final days in the hospital. And, when I didn't hear from my dad for a couple of days, and then, it was a night on the scoreboard never going to forget. It was a very hot night. I was coming down the press box to get something to drink, and the press box was just silent. And it, for a guy that spent a lot of time in the press box, when you work on the manual scoreboard and you're just sweating bullets and you're trying to get a cold drink in the press box, maybe talk to a couple people, it's never quiet. And the one thing I'll never forget when Jack Buck did pass that night is just how quiet it was. I mean, I didn't see Joe Buck there. I didn't see really anybody in particular. Just everybody looked like the world outside the press box had ended. I mean, it's just one of those things where you knew without having to know what happened. I mean, there's sometimes when you spend enough time around people, when you're around a group of people like the media and the radio guys and Jack Buck, and and I happened to get a chance to speak to Jack Buck a few times, and as he actually went to the same Carl's Drive-In in Brentwood that I went to, and he would be in the corner of the Cardinals Drive, and I had to go say hi. It'd be like seeing Mick Jagger if you're a St. Louis Cardinals fan. You had to go over and just, say hi. And, so I got a chance to talk to him a few times, and, he was one of those guys when I came in the press box and I would see, I'd go and just say hi, Mr. Buck, and he'd shake your hand every time, and he'd even find a way to talk to you, and he'd ask you about the scoreboard. I can't remember. I just hope he didn't tell me that I put a number in upside down. that was my biggest concern when talking to him, but he was a great guy. And then when he got sick and he got in the hospital and you didn't see him in the press box, it was different. And when I came in the press box that night, it was just like, everybody knew without having to know. And I mean, I'll never forget his speech. I mean, nobody ever will, but I was at Mizzou when he gave that speech right after 9/11. I mean, nobody's going to forget that. I really wanted to come back, and I was stuck at school. I had classes, and I couldn't come back for the work on the scoreboard that night. And it's just one of those things where I've never been more glued to a television watching that moment from my dorm room. And as far as my memory of Jack Buck, that's going to be it, along with the budget calls. But what I remember the last about flying out that night is just how quiet the press box was, because people were, even people, somebody like Jack Buck can be as sick as anybody, but you still hope that he might pull through and he might live a little longer. And there became a time where I think we all knew that it was going to happen, but you still don't want it to happen. And when it did, the press box was just so silent. And that's why I remember about it.
Yeah. I mean, being away from it and, most of what we get, right. We've been TV, you knew he was sick, you knew things were, but you didn't necessarily know until maybe the next day. I don't remember. I mean, 2002, I was, was online and things of that nature, and maybe I was on that night. I don't quite remember. I think it was probably the next day before we knew that he had passed, because he went after it. It was after the game when he passed. In fact, I think Joe called that game and then went to the hospital. I may be wrong. But, again, as we've talked numerous times in the last 13 years, the irony, or whatever you want to call it, of Daryl Kyle's last start being that night, of Kyle getting the win, of walking off the mound, and then 5 days later in Chicago, he doesn't wake up. And that is still burned into my memory. I remember I was on the computer, and I had the game on Fox, and was wondering why it wasn't coming on. And, you know, Joe Girardi comes out and says there's been a tragedy. And honestly, first thing I thought was there'd been some sort of delayed reaction to Buck's death. You know, that somehow they had decided to, you know, not play because of Jack Buck. Because the others, you know, I thought that long enough until you see Joe Buck. Joe Buck, who is, like I said, this is why I think he had been there. You know, he just buried his father. And then he's coming on national television to say that a pitcher for this team, the team that he's followed closer, he's had connections to closer than any other team, has passed away. He's the public face of that as well, as he comes on and says that Darryl Kyle has been found dead. That was heartrending. I mean, that whole situation, when you look at the kids and you look at the family, and, you know, it was just, it hit home more than Jack, because as much as Jack meant to this organization and as much as he still has a legacy here, he was, what, 80-something?
He had
Parkinson's. You knew that was coming. If it didn't come that day, it was coming in the next year or the next 2 years. It was coming soon.
Yeah, I mean,
Darryl Kyle that was not even in the horizon for Darryl Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, and I remember being on the scoreboard for Darryl Kyle's last win. I mean, he beat the Angels. He pitched the Cardinals into first base. I mean, it was a great game, and it's just one of those things where, you know, when something happens to athletes or even celebrities, when they die, you know, you get shocked because you go, well, I watch these guys on TV. I mean, they should be superhuman. I mean, they shouldn't be susceptible to, you know, the regular things that can happen, like dying in your sleep, you know, to an enlarged heart, or having a clogged artery, or dying of just being, you know, of just finally succumbing to life. And when Darryl Kyle died, I was driving in the car with my mom, and I was going on a highway, and I was like, that couldn't be right. I mean, I just watched this guy pitch the other night. I watched him play with his kids at that family day, you know, that they have for the team. I mean, he was playing with his girls. I mean, this was a young guy, respected by his teammates. I mean, he didn't have the, you know, the numbers of some of the Cardinal greats, but he was kind of like a Waino or a Carp. I mean, he was a guy that team really depended on, and, you know, he was the guy that was one of the faces of the team, and you know, and here he is, he pitches this great, I think it was 7 2/3 against the Angels, where he just pitched a dominant game and put us in first place, and I don't think we ever gave it back up, and just the way the team rallied. But what I remember most about Darryl Kyle's passing is seeing, you know, Joe Girardi go into the center of the field at Wrigley Field, and just, I mean, I've never seen a player who just couldn't put a sentence out. I mean, and you could just tell right there what kind of, even two teams that have fought each other in a rivalry that stretched back decades. I mean, you can just see like that baseball is a brotherhood. And when somebody does pass, it rocks everybody. I mean, even listen to Albert Pujols' comments about Oscar Tavares dying, how he gave the kid advice and he even gave him some of his bats, and, you know, you don't realize that kind of thing, because it is a business, and, you know, they're paid a lot of money to play this game, but they're human, and the human frailty factor, it can hit anybody. And when it happened to Darryl Kyle, it was a shock, and seeing it just play out in a very popular ballpark where the Cardinals play so many games in Wrigley, it was almost like chilling. I never use the word chilling in real life, just because that's usually reserved for a movie or a thriller or some kind of hyper or heightened sense. But it was really chilling that whole morning of just finding it out and wanting it not to be true, wanting it to be some kind of hoax, because they do that now on the internet. They'll have these fake things about people dying, and they'll make you mad, but you get reassured when they're wrong. And this is one thing I didn't want to be right, but it did. It just got more uncomfortable as the day went on.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the one thing, the great, maybe one of the best stats that the Cardinals history has is the fact that the Cardinals won 57 games in the season after Darryl Kyle's passing. You know, which was exactly his number. And I still remember that postseason, them carrying out his jersey onto the field once they won series, you know, so he could be part of it. It was a telling time. I think that's one of those defining things for a lot of the people of our age. Just because it did, you know, a little bit of mortality, into a game that doesn't have it very often. We got to find something better to end on, though. yeah. I got to say, we're not going to end it on this.
Yeah.
You're not going to end it on talking about the offense and
pick up our Kleenex.
got to find something positive. And the Cardinals are still winning ball games, so there's that. I don't know what else to end on.
I guess you have to have faith in the fact that if you're going to have one thing going wrong over a long period of time, it can be the hitting. Because if your pitching is going bad, then your hitting doesn't even have a chance to even get a spot in the game. So I would say that if there's a consolidation in this bridge that the Cardinals are currently on as we approach the middle of the season, I think that hitting can come around faster than pitching can. I think that just because, you know, the Cardinals send one pitcher out there every day to hopefully pitch 7 or 8 innings and you hope he's good. Well, you know, I mean, they send 8 guys out there to take at bats and hopefully take 4 bats apiece. And you hope, though, there's hope in the fact that you're going to face the Phillies for 3. And then, you know, you're going to face who I just call Giancarlo Stanton, the rest of the Marlins. That's kind of what I call the Miami team. They're still a beatable team. And you get these 6 games before you get the Cubs at home at Busch, and then you also get the White Sox after that, and then the Padres, you know, before you finish in that big stretch with the Cubs on the road and the Pirates. I think you get these 6 games to figure out, okay, I mean, are our bats seriously lost? Do we need outside help? Can it just be a matter of calling somebody up from Memphis, or is it going to be a bat from the outside? I think the Cardinals are going to get some answers this weekend. I mean, they're facing a very weak team in Philadelphia. They're not facing Cole Hamels. They have to find their bats. I think their pitching will be there, and I want to think that if the bats can find their way any weekend, it's going to be this weekend in Philadelphia. I think that's where the hope has to be, is that you're facing a team that's very, very hittable.
Yeah, hopefully so, and we'll see that starting tomorrow night. All the things go in their favor, but that obviously hasn't necessarily meant things in the past. Let's talk real quick before we leave. Let's talk about the All-Star game since it's coming up. I know we talked a little bit about it last night on UCB Radio about which Cardinals could go, should go. I think right now the voting has Johnny Peralta, Matt Carpenter, maybe Matt Holliday still in the leads. I know Buster Posey passed Yadier Molina. Obviously those 3 go. I think Yadi should go. I think Colton Wong should go. I think you're going to see somebody, either Carlos Martinez or Michael Wacha go. Trevor Rosenthal, assuming he's healthy. I mean, he's been probably the best closer that's out there. He's got to go. I mean, we're talking, you've got 7 or 8 that easily could go. Now, when you start getting into roster crunches and everybody has to go, everybody has to have a team, a representative and things of that nature, they're probably not all going to go, but I think they've got, you know, 8 to 9 representatives that could easily make a case.
I mean, this could very well be the Cardinals against the Royals in the All-Star game. And the crazy thing could be happening in Cincinnati where, you know, they'll be lucky to have, you know, 1 guy. I mean, yeah, it's a very exciting thing. I mean, you have a lot of Cardinals that are very deserving. I mean, unfortunately, you're going to have Matt Holliday, who's going to get probably a lot of votes to be there, and he isn't going to be able to play. I think Yadier Molina is going to be there as a backup to Posey in a very at least sense. He's going to be there. And you get Carper, and you get Wong, and you get Peralta, and you get a lot of guys that are just, really playing well. And it's nice to get represented in the All-Star game, because that means that game won't feel like it's not a Cardinal game. It'll feel like it's a Cardinal game, and the Cardinals don't get 3 days off. So the more Cardinals that are there, the better. I mean, you very well could have Rosenthal in that bullpen. So for me, it's just getting a chance to see the Cardinals play, you know, an extra game when they're not supposed to have the day off. So, and you know, as any fan of their team will say, I mean, you feel most confident with your guys out there, especially when they have guys like Giancarlo Stanton and Bryce Harper playing with them. So, you're right. Bryce Harper came out of the game with an injury. So hopefully, hopefully for that game, he's not too hurt. The All-Star game is a very, as we all know, it counts, and we all know that the fans vote these guys in, and I hope that the Cardinals get enough guys in there so it could seem like it's another day at the office for Cardinal fans.
Hopefully so. I know that you're a movie guy. I don't know what your TV watching habits are, but I don't know. Do you watch the Arrow, show Arrow?
I do not, but I've heard a lot about it. It's one of those shows that I do want to get into, but if it has to do with any kind of comic or superhero, I'm game. I'm all for it.
That's great. The Flash is great, and you should watch. But the reason I actually bring this up is not a total out of left field thing. Is the star of Arrow is Stephen Amell, who has been known to take to social media quite often and rally his fan base. He is also a fan of the Toronto Blue Jays, and so is after the Royals have taken over the American League voting, he is pushing through his fans Josh Donaldson for third base for the All-Star game. He's kind of mobilizing his social army, to go voting for him, and he's really really involved, really passionate about it. And I got to say, it's motivated me to not only fill out my 35, but get one of my other email addresses and do another 35, which I don't always do. I mean, this is, 35 votes is a drop in the bucket, but for the most part, it's not worth the time. If you're out there and you haven't done your voting, go vote for Josh Donaldson while you're voting for Cardinals on this side. If nothing else, it'll break up the Royal stranglehold, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, when you think about an All-Star game, you don't really think about a team overpowering one team. You kind of want a little spread. You kind of want, as a fan, you want to see your guys play with these great players, and you want to see them on the field together and talking and interacting and coming together. I remember a couple of years ago with the Cardinals, when the National League finally won a big game, Prince Fielder hit the home run. It was like, all right, all these guys I usually don't root for are helping the Cardinals with home field advantage. And yeah, you kind of want a good spread of people out there. It's no fun to watch, except for if it's, for Kansas City and St. Louis. It's no really fun to watch a bunch of, if you're not a town person, I'm watching it basically as this one team play instead of seeing this great spread of all-stars. So, yeah, I personally think I hope it's a little more spread out.
Well, and the downside if you're a Royals fan is if all eight of your guys are starting, they're out after the third inning, and what are you going to watch then?
That's right, yeah.
There's some of that. Don't get me wrong, I really like it when the Cardinals start, because they do get to play 2, 3, 4 innings maybe instead of maybe just taking an at-bat. But in years where they've only had that one representative, that kept you watching. You kept saying, when are they going to come in? When are they going to play? If your guys are done, I think there's less motivation to watch. Because I don't think you don't watch the All-Star game for pure baseball. You just don't. There's no strategies. There's no significant bunting. There's not a whole lot of hit and runs. There's not a whole lot of signs. You may see some steals out of the really fast guys. Philly Hamilton goes for the Reds, which isn't likely, but if he did, he'd be stealing, but that's about it. You're watching it just to see the players, get their few things, see how they interact, see all the jerseys on the field. You're not watching it for, the true baseball experience. So if you're not watching it for that and you're not watching it for your guys, it's probably when you're turning it off. So, if all eight Cardinals wanted to start, I'd be fine with it. But there are advantages to having them spread out throughout the game.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think all around, if you take a consensus of all the fans, they're really wanting to see. I think if voting was able to be overloaded by one fan base, I think people would really like to see a bunch of different All-Stars. Back in the day, you really wanted to see, Mark McGwire come together with all the rest of the Nationals. You didn't want to see Mark McGwire play with a bunch of Cardinals. Especially if you're a team, if you're a fan base from another city, you want to see all these different guys come together and play for this one game a year. It's supposed to be a Midsummer Classic. It's supposed to be an enjoyable game that's made now to determine a very important factor of who plays Game 7 at home in the World Series. And if it's that, if the Cardinals aren't hitting that good lately, at the time, you don't really want them representing the whole league in the All-Star game. You're like, hey, let's get some of these other guys in here, and then we'll kind of filter the Cardinals in there. But, aside from that, I think you do want to see a good spread of All-Stars on that team. You want to see them out there starting, too. Because even if your guys don't start, that means they'll be coming into the game when it's more meaningful anyway.
This is true. This is true. So, and I could go on for hours on why
Shouldn't
count and the idiocy that there is in the All-Star games.
But me too. Me too.
Yeah, I think everybody's kind of on the same page with that one as well. So, Dan, I think I'm done. You, what about you? Are we going to wrap it?
I think we topped last show, didn't we? We're at about 115 right now, almost.
Yeah, we may have. I'm sure. You know, if you want us to be shorter, you're going to have to tell us.
You're going to have to really tell us because two Dans can go pretty much all night. I mean, we could really talk almost in the morning, and then we, but that would require some coffee. But as far as getting us to be quiet, that's not easy. And usually we have to just, like, you know, wait for the line to go dead. But we'll try to keep it as short as we can. But the way this team's playing, they give us plenty to talk about.
Yep, that's true. And we're gonna, you know, even if they weren't, we'd probably be able to talk about it quite a bit. Anyway, that's it for this week. If y'all come back at us next week, we'll try to do it again and maybe even shorter. So for Dan, I'm Daniel. We'll talk to you later.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to The Best Dans in Baseball. We'd love to have your feedback on the show. Email us at bestdansinbaseball@gmail.com. Dan Buffa can be found on Twitter at Buffa82, Daniel Shoptaw at C70. The show's Twitter handle is Best Dan, BASEBAL1. You can also find us on Facebook under Best Dans in Baseball.